We are recording, sir.
This is good news. This is a silver lining in an otherwise dark couple of days in the life of Mike and Scotty.
I blame the success of it on our unshaking faith in Skype and our vow to never, ever upgrade it.
No, never. So welcome to Mike and Scotty Live. This is our February edition, Mike, where we're plowing, no pun intended, through winter at a rapid pace here. And folks, actually, Mike and I are, if we, we're going to try to sound upbeat tonight, but it's going to be a little difficult. Both being rabid New England Patriots fans, we were dealt a crushing blow on Sunday, and
much
with
to
that,
the delight of most of the country.
Well, everybody else, right? But so here's the thing. You know, we want to send out our congratulations to all our listeners who are Philadelphia Eagles fans. The Eagles played a phenomenal football game on both sides of the football, and they truly deserve to be Super Bowl champs this year. So
yep, they were the better team.
Yeah, our hats go out off to them. We were outplayed and outcoached, and it's difficult to win Super Bowls when you're giving up 41 points in a football game. So we know there are some out there. I've seen a bunch of stuff on Facebook, and I'm very happy for you. Everybody should be able to experience the joy that Mike and I and our fellow Patriots fans have had over the last several years, right?
And we're just warning you, don't rub it in.
Well,
too much anyway.
It's part of the process, I guess. But you know, I don't know anybody in New England that doesn't feel like the Patriots, you know, played poorly and didn't deserve to win. So you know, that's the consensus around here anyway. The Eagles were the better team. So that's the way it is. But we move on, and I just said to Mike, you know, spring training starts next week, so life is good.
I couldn't be more excited.
Me either. You know, this is, Mike, this is a rare podcast for us.
Really?
In that we're both sober. No.
speak for yourself.
Yeah, no, I get this can of DMSO open, and I'm huffing over here. But
Google that.
Yeah. There's no layout update per se this month.
Well, and there's a reason for that.
And I know, and now you're going to tell us.
Well, I had, as some people may recall, my early plan for my addition project was to have a weathertight enclosure by the winter. But I said everything had to go perfectly for that to happen, and surprise, everything did not go perfectly. So nothing's happened yet. And then I thought, well, I've got an opportunity here where it's winter. There's not really anything pressing to do on the layout, given the fact that, you know, a few things are going to change and be moved around and what have you. So with not wanting to get into that situation where you do something and then you have to undo it, I'm kind of done with kaboom, you know.
Yeah.
So I figured this is a chance to dig up some projects. And I think last month we talked about my resurrecting and revisiting some hangar queens, you know, some projects that had been languishing in drawers. And the funny thing is, the more drawers I opened, the more aghast I got at how many things were in drawers, half done, undone, mostly done, never going to be done, you know, you name it, everything you can think of. And I've just been having a little bit of fun knocking these projects off. I already completed a full build of a Conrail GP35, and I'm in the final stages of completion of two Conrail GP30s. I'm doing a Norfolk and Western small fuel tank low hood GP30 with a little hand holding from Andy Harmon, who knows all things N&W. And I'm enjoying this, and it's nice to see these things that have just been just residue in boxes turn into something kind of cool and useful. The only disheartening thing I'm finding is that with a lot of these projects, some of which have been moribund for 10 years or more, believe it or not, I am not finding 100% of the parts in all cases. I know that sounds like a surprise, but I'm finding most of them, which is encouraging. But for example, out of these four GP30 35s that I'm working on, missing a motor. How do you lose a motor and flywheel assembly? You know, I mean, that's kind of a big thing to lose. It's a rhetorical question. You know, it's just gone. It's just gone. So, you know, I have been beating the bushes trying to find a few of these crucial missing parts. In some cases, I'm replacing the parts out of, you know, miscellaneous parts bags from collections that I've bought over the years of my own stuff. But how do you lose a Kato motor? It's just like, you got to be kidding me. So things like that can sometimes throw a little monkey wrench into the works. But in general, you know, that is going well, and it's kind of nice to get back to painting and decaling and all that stuff I hadn't done in quite some time. It's like riding a bike. Haven't forgotten how.
I got nothing right now.
Well, you'd have to get back to modeling to actually throw in a similar kind of of an anecdote. And I predict you will. I really and truly believe that.
Well, but I have, right?
Well, have you?
So I have. So, dear listeners.
Boy, we are prepared for this, aren't we?
No, I am. I am. I got this. I can drive now. I can close my eyes and touch my nose with my fingers.
Great.
Mike and I are collaborating on a structure project for Mike's layout. And this is fun. I mean, this is the part of the hobby that I really like. The research, the getting to doing the investigation, the forensics of taking pictures of a building, interpreting them, and designing a model of that building based on the information that you have, and the need to kind of extrapolate a little on what you don't see.
Does make for a fun collaborative effort because, I mean, when you think about it, we've had at least, what would you say, at least four, maybe more in-depth phone conversations where we're both looking at the plan and talking about dimensions and looking at the proto photo and trying to interpret things on it and that kind of thing.
It's been a process, and I don't know how many times you've done this with someone to this degree.
I haven't. I've never done it.
Okay, you may not want to do it again. We've had a lot of give and take regarding what this is and how you go from a couple of pictures that are basically taken from the same angle, various magnifications, and then turn that into, first a CAD drawing and second of all, a three-dimensional structure. It's not an easy process. And, we've talked about, the exact dimensions of space between windows.
Right, or loading doors. It's I'm actually benefiting a lot from your experience with this because although I've built a slew of buildings, both you know freelanced and you know interpreted from proto photos, this is the first time I've done something like this. This is actually more like what I went back and forth with my architect, you know, when I was designing the addition, because, you know, you describe to him what you want, you give him some rough material, he takes a cut at it, gives it back to me, and I go, yeah, I like this and this, but that's good, this other thing has to change, and I wish it was this, you know what I mean? So it's been a very, it's almost like working with an architect to design this building. And it's a very different model railroading thing for me because usually when I'm building something, I just kind of dive into it and I'm working, you know, in a very hands-on way with it, and I would be neck deep in it by now, you know, whereas I haven't even started this thing, even though we've been talking about it for a little over a month, I guess. Now, the benefit is all of this discussion that we're having should yield me something that is largely complete when you hand it to me. In other words, yeah, it's going to need to be colored and put together, but I could probably do that in a couple or 3 days and then install my windows and substantially have a whole building. Whereas if I was scratch building the thing, it would be a lot more work and a lot of it would be tedious.
I think it would be more difficult to get what you wanted, because you're limited by the materials that are available. In this case, we're going to laser cut a brick building from sheet basswood, and we can, based on the ability to carve brick into wood with a laser, we can do anything. There are really no limitations on designs or architectural detail or anything like that. So, there's an opportunity to for this building to look exactly like you want it to look.
Well, from the project manager standpoint, one of the things we always try to look for are milestones and get some idea of what the various delivery dates are. So I'm just wondering, from a managing expectation standpoint, when am I going to see this?
Well, so let me give you an update. First of all, before we do that, why don't you tell the listeners what this building is, what its origins are, and how we kind of got to this point.
Yeah, I think we touched on it briefly, but we definitely should revisit that. This is a paper mill in Ransom, Pennsylvania, on Conrail's Lehigh line, and it was also a big customer of Lehigh Valley's. And like many of these mills in my era, it was shipping and receiving by rail in pretty good quantities, with multiple boxcar spots and even a couple of chemical spots. Raw materials in, finished goods out. Not unlike Mehoopany, except not on that scale. And the mill has had a bunch of different owners and a bunch of different names and correspondingly a bunch of different appearances. And the one that I chose, which just looked the best to me, was something out of Mike Bednar's book, or one of his books, because he's got a bunch of them. But in one of the books, there's a full center spread showing a Lehigh Valley Baldwin switcher switching cars on the shipping and receiving end of the mill. And it's the best picture I've seen of the whole mill, showing the brick sides of it and then some of the other stuff that comprises it. But the only problem with it is it's by no means a dead-on view of it. It's a your typical roster shot sort of three-quarter view. And because of that, there's a great deal of interpretation about size. And one of the things we had to figure out was, all right, how high is this thing? You've got some knowns in the photo with these freight cars, so I kind of scaled it using some known dimensions of freight cars, and then we went back and forth a little bit. I think Scott tweaked some of the supposed dimensions to be things more in line with his experience with some of these buildings, in other cases. Because a lot of it was just guesswork on my part. And the overarching consideration is it just needs to look right. It's not like somebody's going to come in and say, "Hey, that Ransom Mill had an extra set of windows that you didn't have in there." I don't
So
even care about that.
there's the nobody knows piece to this, right?
Yep.
We're the only ones that are going to know as much about this building as there is to know that would show up at your house.
Right.
So to
And
me,
really,
the
what's the building's function? In other words, if you were building for the Historical Society a rendition of this thing as a scale model in a particular time frame, that would be one thing. But really, what's the building's purpose? The purpose of this building is to look like a consignee and act as something other than a treed backdrop for 40 something inches of layout. And make the whole scene of operating a local there a lot more fun than it is with nothing there. You know what I mean? So that to me is the function of the building.
So, right, and you're always going to look at it first and foremost from the operations lens. My view is a little broader in that, I want it to be a close representation of the actual building.
Little selective compression, obviously.
Hand in hand with that.
But not a lot, actually, when you come
No,
down to
not
it.
a lot. It's a big building. It's well over 40 inches long.
Right.
The second piece, the piece that goes hand in hand with wanting it to look as close as I can get it to the real building, is it does have to be functional.
Sure.
It doesn't make any sense to, do an exact duplicate of the building if it doesn't work, if it doesn't fit in with the layout, if it's
Sure.
oversized, if there's too much siding, too little siding, whatever the case is. So there's a little bit of tinkering that goes along to get it to that point. Then there's kind of solving the mysteries that are involved with this building. And as I said at the beginning of the conversation, there's really only kind of one view of this building. And there are several boxcars that are obscuring one whole portion of the building. So, Mike and I are doing a lot of guesswork based on what we believe are, some common commonalities with, industrial buildings, and particularly buildings that once serviced 40-foot boxcars, now are servicing 50-foot boxcars.
Right.
So dock heights and door openings and door placement and that sort of thing.
That's
And
when I
what
tossed out the idea of what would the spacing have been like for 40-foot boxcars, and then how about if we blank out a door and cut in a more modern door to accommodate a pair of 50-footers? And
Yep.
Scott jumped right on that and said, yeah, that's exactly what we should be, the kind of way we need to be thinking about this, even though we can't really see what's going on behind the boxcars. And they'll usually be boxcars spotted there, but when you're switching the mill and you pull the cutout, it's going to look defensible.
Yep. Yep. So this has been a lot of fun to this point. I love the interaction and the conversation that you and I are having, Mike, about what goes where. There's always revisions,
Oh yeah.
and
And we've
every
changed our
time,
mind about some things as part of these this
yeah. Well, no,
conversation.
every revision gets us closer to, the end result.
And yet every time you see a revision, you look at it and go, I like that, but now that makes me think we need to think about this.
So to answer your question, and I'll answer it with another preface.
Just
So
say, I don't know.
no, I probably do know. So bear with me.
Okay.
So listeners, we've got consensus on kind of the main facade of this building, which is, kind of the biggest piece. It's the piece that's going to be seen by people visiting the layout. It's the piece that we can kind of extrapolate the most information from. So in one regard, it was probably the easiest to do, but it was also by far the biggest, and the most work had to go into it. The rest of the building is kind of blind to the eye. So I'm sure there's going to be revisions, but they're smaller wall sections. It's less important, how many windows and the placement of those windows, as long as, everything kind of lines up and is in sync with the rest of the building. So I think that those pieces will fall in line pretty quickly. So to answer your question, we are expecting a snow day tomorrow, and I'm supposed to drive to central New Hampshire, which I'm going to reschedule because they're supposed to get a foot of snow up there.
Really?
Yeah,
It's gonna rain here. That's that South Coast thing. So I like that.
so I believe I'm going to be able to wrap this thing up, get the next, the rest of the walls done and off to you. The other piece to this, is there's nothing on the back side of this building.
Right.
So ostensibly, I'm just doing half a building.
And when you're doing, I guess one of the things you're working up is the truck loading dock wall, which is sort of the left side of the building. We had talked about that, but I haven't seen an iteration of that. And you're going to have to do some corresponding whatevers for the two right-hand walls, right? And basically, just do something in keeping with the rest of the building, like we've been talking about, and whatever it is, I think is going to be just fine.
Yeah, well, and you know, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, okay, but you know, maybe we should do this, and you know, that's great, and we'll do that, and you know, then we'll have a design in place.
Yeah, I'll bet I'm not going to change much on those right-hand end walls because I literally have no, I've never seen a picture of those end walls. I don't think anybody ever will. And so therefore I've got nothing in my mind's eye. So as long as it kind of looks in keeping with the rest of the building, I think that's going to be just fine.
No, I agree. So
The
this has
thing
been
I'm most
fun.
curious about, by the way, just to interject, is to see what the shipping and receiving wall that we've been going back and forth on. I mean, I sort of have an idea what that's going to look like, but I'm dying to see what it's actually going to look like because, with the big walls, I've got the picture. I kind of know how that is supposed to be, and I know what we've talked about. But it's one thing to look at it as a greatly reduced fine line drawing, and it's quite another to see it as this 44-inch long. Wow, so there it is, kind of thing. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, me too. And you know,
How long
ultimate
does it take to cut a couple of big sides like that? Is it like an hour or more or less? I just have no sense of it.
I don't know how fast this laser moves. I would say with, you know, lasers that I've used in the past, it's probably a couple of hours. I would suspect that this laser is a little more powerful. It may move a little faster, but I could be wrong. Believe me, when we get to that point, you know, I'll be sitting back with my feet up watching the laser go back and forth, making sure it doesn't catch on fire. That's my only worry at that
Well, you
point.
haven't even used this yet yourself, right?
No, I haven't. I haven't. So I went in half with it, with a friend of mine who designs and builds and sells racing car wheels for people who race online. And he found a brand new laser, a 60-watt laser at a great price, and was well worth the money. Even though I haven't, he's had it for 2 years, you know, a year and a half at this point, and I've never used it once.
How does the size of that compare to like the ones that Jimmy uses for his production work?
It's bigger. So this particular laser was manufactured in China, and so in American lasers, the bed is usually 12 inches by 24 inches. So you can fit a couple of lengths of sheet basswood in there.
Okay.
This one, I think it's like 16 inches by 28 or 29 inches. Which is great, except unfortunately you still can't buy sheet basswood that's longer than 24 inches. So it doesn't really, you know, the extra size doesn't do you any good as it relates to that particular medium. There's plenty of stuff that you can fit in there that you know, for other things that make better use of the space.
What else would you cut with it? Like, what other uses are there?
You can cut or etch just about anything. You know, you can etch glass, you can etch metal, you can cut all sorts of wood and paper and plastic and resin. You know, the laser is adjustable in terms of its output so that you can control the cutting depth, the cutting speed. So it's a balance. You want to balance that seesaw right in the middle. You don't want to go so fast that you're burning the wood, and you don't want to go, you know, too slow because, you know, it just takes forever. You don't want the laser to be so powerful that your cutting tolerances are too big. And those are all things you kind of learn as you go along.
So you're going to have a fair amount of playing around with it to get the right type of lasing, for lack of a better term, before you actually cut the side itself, right?
Well, I don't think so, because first of all, because there are some written guidelines based on, the product that you're cutting.
Okay.
But the other thing too is that my buddy Sam has done quite a bit of experimenting, and he's been very anxious to, get me to come and use the thing. And we did experiment one day on cutting the brick pattern.
Yep.
So, I'm going to rely on him, and there may be a little experimentation, but I don't think it's going to be a particularly lengthy process.
Interesting.
So yeah, so,
So sometime tomorrow I may see a an iteration, and then based on that, maybe cutting is the next thing.
well, if we can get a consensus on the design the next couple of days, and I can get some sheet basswood, in the next few days to a week. And my goal was to just pick it up in person, but I'm probably just ordering it.
Where are they
And
located?
they're in Methuen, which is Methuen, Mass, is where Northeastern Scale Lumber is located, and they're a major supplier of sheet basswood and milled dimensional basswood.
I guess it's a safe bet that eventually you're going by there since you're
Well,
just.
I go near there on a really regular basis. It's about 1 hour and 20 minutes from here, but I have a lot of clients in New Hampshire, and inevitably it takes me near there. So, in fact, I'm going near there on Friday, and it's just timing, whether I can get there. But that would be my goal at this point. If that can happen, then there's a possibility that if my buddy's around, that maybe Saturday we could do some cutting.
Wow,
I
that's
don't want to get your hopes up.
no, I know. It's better to under promise and over deliver, right?
I didn't say which Saturday.
Yeah, that's true. I won't hold you to it.
Maybe when we get the design, I don't, it's your design. I don't know what you want to do with it, but if you wanted to post it, maybe there might be some interest in seeing it. If we wanted to post some pictures of the laser cut pieces, maybe there'd be some interest in seeing it. And
Yeah, why not?
if we're going to talk about it on the podcast, then we might as well. So that's where we are with that. I've actually got a busy Friday. Besides 3 appointments in New Hampshire, immediately following, I'm headed up to Dick Elwell's house for an operating session. He's got his Berkshire Valley, Berkshire Hudson division of the NMRA group coming over
Ah,
Friday
that was
to
going to be
talk.
my next question. Who's the cast of characters? So
Yeah.
these are regulars on his
Oh,
crew.
they're regulars, and they're a good group of guys.
How
They
many
operate
people typically would be at that?
anywhere from 72 to infinity. No, I would say probably a dozen.
I would have guessed a dozen, and when you come right down to it, that's a pretty good number of people for an op session, if you're not super organized. Although if you pair them up, I guess it's not so bad, but still, it could be like herding cats if nobody knew what they were doing.
Some guys operate, some guys don't. They just come over for the camaraderie. There's always a little meeting that goes along with it.
Yep.
I'm kind of the tag along guy. I know the group, so I don't feel bad inviting myself up. And I haven't seen Dick in a while, so I'm anxious to spend some time with him as well. And he's, we talked about last time. He's spent the better part of the past 2 months under the layout replacing switch machines. He had had
Oh.
many Hank's Craft machines, which were kind of the original slow motion machines, and they ran well for years and years, and in most cases still run well. But he's replacing all of them with Tortoise machines.
Now, if they still run well, what's the driving factor to
Well,
replacing them?
the driving factor of the matrices that he can create with the NCE
Ah.
system. So, he's got a lot of ladders in the yards. He's got a lot of switches that need to work in tandem. So, you can pair those up and do what you need to do and control them through the NCE controller. Which, I give him so much credit. We were talking about this the other day and kind of laughing. He was one of the first model railroaders to, kind of go headfirst into the deep end with the changeover from DC to DCC.
An early adopter.
He really was, and it was at the time, everyone kind of gasped. Because he had a fully functioning, fully operational, fully wired model railroad that ran beautifully, and I think people just kind of thought that the end of days was coming along.
Well, having torn out a fully functional rotary five cab DC setup on my own layout, I understand the horror.
We were kind of laughing because he was talking about the new decoders that you installed on Jason Fontaine's locomotives and how great they sounded, and how he was still had a lot of the soundtrack stuff, and he felt like he was behind in the process all of a sudden, but here he is at 82 and a half years old. Replacing every single slow motion machine under his layout. And we're not talking, five or six of them, by
And
the way.
he's doing it himself,
Oh,
right?
he's doing it himself.
Yeah.
And, the layout, for those of you who don't know, and I know we talk about this a lot, but the original layout existed in another house on the other side of the town that he lives in. And at 65 or 6 years old, he and his wife sold the house, built a brand new house that was twice the size of their existing house, even though their kids had long since grown up and moved out, and took apart the layout, split it up into sections, spread it out inside the new basement, and then filled in the gaps in between.
Jeez.
But some of the old sections of the layout were, designed in such a way that the difference between a Hangscraft switch machine and a Tortoise switch machine just it doesn't work. So he's ended up having to do a lot of surgical carpentry
Oh boy.
on the layout, to get it, to the to where he needed it to be to put in these new switch machines.
I've done a lot of redos, but what he's doing doesn't sound even remotely like what I would call fun.
Well, I talked to him yesterday because I needed a shoulder to cry on after the football game Sunday night, and I said, "How are you making out with the switch machines?" He said, "Oh," he says, "I got a beaut." He says, "I'm replacing a machine that's under some cabinets, that's above some cabinets that are under the layout." He said, "But the problem is that the cabinets, these old kitchen cabinets, are supporting the layout."
So he can't move them out.
So he said, "I've had to, rig up, new legs so that I can take the cabinets out so I can get these switches." So it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. Now, we also talked about last time. I'll report back on how the operating session goes. I'm anxious to get
Take
up there.
some pictures too.
I will take some pictures. We also mentioned on the last podcast that Jason Fontaine, a guy that we both know and a guy that you've done quite a bit of work for in terms of installing decoders in his locomotives, and who's a not only a mutual friend of ours, but a mutual friend to Dick's. And if you've got the Hoosic Valley Railroad DVD that I produced a few years back, Jason actually is in there, doing in kind of our testimonial section of the DVD. He had his first operating session a few weeks ago, and Dick happened to be there, and Dick reports that the session went. He felt the session went really, really well. He said, and I know Mike, you can relate to this. Very similar to, the first operating session on any good model railroad.
You end up with a punch list of things you want to address, but in general, you're happy with what happened.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So he
I
said.
haven't spoken to Jason because he's just in Florida. I think he's back now, but he's due to come by here and have me give him a 1 evening tutorial on the Loke Sound programmer. And there's nothing quite like getting somebody to sort of give you a jump start on it. It's not the most complicated thing in the world, but if you haven't used that system before, it's kind of a lot to bite off without somebody saying, okay, here's what you need to know, and here's what you don't even need to pay attention to. In other words, you don't even know starting out how much of what's there you're going to even interact with.
It's the great unknown.
I know I operated at Dick's, quite a few years ago. That's got to be 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Probably, yes.
I'm trying to remember how big his basement is compared to mine. Is it like 50% larger, would you guess?
I'd say it's twice the size of
Like the
yours.
size of Confalone's, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
But his is more of a square.
That's right. Yes. Mike's is a long,
Yes.
yeah.
Mike's got a colonial, and which is, by design, a rectangle, and Dick's is more of a contemporary design. It's more square. And I'll tell you, don't anybody be fooled. That house, the architectural design of that house was chosen based on the shape of the basement.
I have no
It's a
doubt.
beautiful home. It serves their needs perfectly. But
Well, if you're starting over, you'd be a fool to ignore that, right?
well, so the story is, and nobody denies this in the Elwell household, is that Sandy, also known as Mrs. Elwell, loved the idea of a new, bigger, more modern house. They had, a fairly small cape, and Dick had finished, for all intents and purposes, had finished building the Hoosic Valley,
Right.
but he was very, very limited by the size of the basement and what he could do. And he not only wanted to expand on it, but he wanted to be able to create additional operating scenarios.
I
So,
can relate.
they both got what they wanted, and they're, as far as I know, they're both still happy with it. So it's a beautiful home. You got a view of Mount Greylock, which is the highest peak in Massachusetts, which is
It's a great area. The only thing about
extensively.
the area is it's not near anything.
No, it's and the shame of the shame of it is, it's 2.5 hours from me. And Dick is not only been a great friend to me, but really a second father. And I regret the fact that we, I just don't get to get up there as much as I'd like. But anyway, moving on, we got a couple of other things, Mike. You wanted to just mention, what's going on with the building addition.
I did speak with my contractor who, the last time we had given any update, I believe I had said that he had been injured, and that's part of what prevented me from getting things happening before the winter. And turns out all is well with him. He's working and on it, and tells me that in about another week he's going to pull the permit, and we're aiming at an early April groundbreaking. That little fact, of course, got me in a lather thinking about everything that I had kind of not thought about for a while. So I've been sort of getting back in touch with all of the myriad details involved in all of that. And in some ways, I'm kind of glad I had extra time to think about it because I've thought of some changes, not that really fundamentally affect the entire project, but things that will make the use of it just that much better. Having the ability to control every aspect of it. But if you haven't thought of it, it's not going to happen. So it's just good to give it another mental walkthrough and say, geez, if I did this. It enables you to think more about how you're going to use it if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. It absolutely does.
So I think it's going to be exciting and terrifying all at once when they finally break ground.
Well, you've been through a large construction process in the past.
I have. I mean, I did build the house, and of course, I was a lot younger back then.
And as have I. And there are just moments where you're just holding your breath.
Well, the difference between building a house and building an addition is all of this happens while you're living there, you know. So I'm hoping that we can do this with a minimal amount of disruption, and I'm optimistic that it'll happen within a relatively compact section of time. So in other words, I'm not looking at 6 months of chaos, hopefully. You know what I mean? I really think it could be a 2 month blitzkrieg, basically. Now, that may be true. That may be just wishful thinking. We're going to find out.
Undoubtedly. As you forge ahead with the process.
Well, you know, people try to plan things, and I've gotten a couple of obsession and invitations for. I just got one today from Ken K for April, and you know, you've got the New England Proto Meet in June, and I'm just finding it impossible to commit to anything during those couple of months because I have no idea what's going to be going on during that time. I might have my hands more than full for 2 or 3 months there.
Yeah, well, it's inevitably disruptive.
Right.
Even something relatively small like that.
Well, particularly if some other things that I thought of during this hiatus, I decide to do, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But I still need to get some input from some other contractors, one of which is a concrete cutting company.
Okay. Is this a segue into this next thing that I'm supposed to ask you about?
I just did it.
Yeah, okay.
It's
Conk.
crazy enough that until I vet the idea a little bit more,
Ah,
I
boy.
don't dare go out on a limb about it. But if I end up doing this, it'll be the most audacious layout addition project from a physical plant standpoint that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. And when will you know for certain?
Certainly, I think by the time we do our next show.
Okay. This is your idea of a surprise, but I honestly have to tell you, at this point, nothing that you do surprises me anymore. And I mean that in a good way.
Well, we'll see if you still feel that way.
No, 'cause you're a guy who's willing to go the extra mile.
You know, I'm not getting any younger. So, if not now, when?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know. So hang in there, listeners. We'll have the rest of the story.
Yeah, I'll talk about it whether it's a go or no go. Because I think the exercise of describing it and the thought process behind it and, you know, the pros and cons would be of interest to somebody.
So I think that's all we have tonight, Mike.
We should mention that we weren't kidding when we said we were going to have a mystery guest on at some point.
Yes.
It's not a cruel hoax, but what we have found is that the scheduling of that has proven to be problematic in the winter. It's a function of some health and some business travel issues for our guest as compared to our own schedules. And it hasn't happened yet, but I'm optimistic.
I am too, and knowing this person, I know what'll happen. It's just a function of time and patience. So,
Right.
and it'll be worth the wait. So hang in there, folks. And as always, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Stay tuned.